Steve.
I got a good feeling.
You got a good feeling?
Yes.
Keep going.
We're taking the easy way.
Yes. Very, very nicely done. Steve Bertrand and I, you know Steve from the newsroom, Wendy.
Hi, Steve.
Steve,
I'm Wendy.
And I were talking earlier about this movie Yesterday, which is now on pay-per-view on your satellite system. I really think you'd enjoy it a lot.
You finally saw it?
I watched it Saturday. I'd been looking forward to it since I first heard about it. And then since it went to pay-per-view, I went, oh, it's too good to pass up. It's right there in my living room. And I didn't know. I knew what the basic storyline was. I will say this without any spoiler alerts at all. It's about a guy who's the only person left on Earth who remembers that the Beatles existed. And
that's difficult to wrap my brain around.
Well, it is. It's very Twilight Zone-y in that respect. But what I didn't know was that at the heart of the movie is a really, really nice love story as well. You don't care for the love stories?
No, why do you got to ruin it with a love story?
You don't want a love story in a movie?
No, I just know that Steve Bertrand saw it right when it came out, and he has been dying to talk about it with.
Well, there's one scene in particular that Steve wanted to discuss, but you have to have seen the movie to...
It'd be totally unfair to try to talk to you about it.
Right.
So, finally, people are renting it, and I'm having these conversations that I've...
You're so patient.
Well... I didn't want to ruin it for people because it was a great moment, I think.
The guy who wrote it is a man named Richard Curtis who has a flair for writing this exact kind of movie where there's a gimmick involved, but you also get, I know you don't like this part, but you also get a nice love story in almost everything he writes.
I do like the love story.
Yeah, it's hard to resist a good love story.
I just finally saw Us.
Isn't that a great movie?
Yeah, I'm a little behind lately. That movie is so freaky deaky.
Yes. What movie is Us? I don't know that one. Is that the scary movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's a psychological thriller.
It is a psychological thriller. Yeah, it doesn't have the love story that I know you like so much, but that's all right.
I guess there was no love story.
No, there wasn't really a love story.
Hate story.
But Julie Andrews isn't in it, so you flock to it.
That's not fair. I'm putting my foot down with the whole Julie Andrews thing.
When you were gone a few weeks ago, we're
on
trying
her neck or what?
We're trying so hard to get Julie Andrews on the show. You know that, right?
I would love to talk
would
to
you
her.
Talk to
I
her?
Don't have a problem with her. I just had a bad childhood where my family did not show me Sound of Music. And then
you had a motherhood where you didn't show your children Sound of Music.
No, they've seen it. That's the funny thing.
You know what's really funny?
What?
Today's Julie Andrews' birthday.
How will you celebrate, Wendy?
I will call her.
I will call her.
You should call Julie Andrews.
Tell her I respect everything she's done. I haven't really seen Mary Poppins in its entirety either, and I hated Victor Victoria.
You know, there were a few years where I got a Christmas card from her, and I swear it was hand-signed.
Why did you get a Christmas card from Julie Andrews?
She's a lovely woman, and when I used to interview authors for Barnes & Noble, I interviewed her, and we had a lovely afternoon together. So, you know, maybe it was a machine, but I would get like a hand-signed Christmas card. Yeah.
I almost think you have to go out of your way to not see her movies. Because sometimes, like, you'll turn on the TV and Sound of Music will be on and you go, oh, all right.
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched the whole thing.
What's it about?
The war and singing children and a family and
you're thinking of Saving
prisoners.
Private Ryan. That's Saving Private Ryan.
Remember when they're all singing in the foxhole?
Yep.
I love that part.
That was beautiful. And there's a love story.
There are hills.
And they're alive with the Sound of Music.
Yes, I know that. And I love music.
Right. Well, all the reasons to see it.
I just feel like I'm not giving in to the man. I haven't seen it forever. So why should I now?
I like that you put your foot down about 3 minutes ago. And
well, I said I was going to watch it this summer. And I just, why?
Isn't it one of those movies, though, that you almost... As a lover of the arts, as a fan of films, don't you kind of feel like I really should see this because at some point somebody's going to talk about it and I'll want to chime in? You don't think so?
I can chime in. I think I know the general premise of it.
But didn't you see The Princess Diaries?
No.
Really? Oh, no. Wow. That is such a great movie.
It is. Wendy, you would like The Princess Diaries.
Yeah, you would really like that one. Anne Hathaway's in it.
Capture your heart.
Even though I don't like
Anne Hathaway.
I don't either, but she's good in it.
Wow.
Isn't Hector Elizondo in that?
Yeah, you love Hector. Who doesn't love
Hector
Elizondo?
Oh, yes, he is.
And he's also in Sound of Music. He plays all the Von Trapp children.
Kirk.
Yeah.
Kurt.
Yep.
Kurt.
Who's every the other one of them.
Oh, Mary, no, you only saw it because you had that many kids in your family.
No, I saw it because my aunt was the only one who would take me to movies, and she took me to see it. So
my grandma took me to see Funny Girl. When that was great.
When you were 16 going on 17, didn't you want to see a movie that represented that in song?
And you could dance in a gazebo?
With German accents?
I had a different teenage life than you guys did, evidently. I was having way more fun at 16 than you guys were.
You ever been in a gazebo? They were in a gazebo?
Yeah, in the rain.
You will never know how to solve a problem like Maria. Your whole life, you will have no idea how to solve that problem.
I thought that's West Side Story. I've seen that. I love that.
And the hills are always alive.
It's where the singing nun came from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, they were singing nuns.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Don't circle, they all sing?
Circle gets the square. Do all nuns sing? Yeah, I think they do.
Didn't you sing Doa Deer when you were learning, you know, how
what
to sing?
What was I learning?
You know.
The musical scale.
The scale, yeah.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't know.
There you go.
Could you find someone else to pick on today?
No, I don't think so.
Sorry.
Golly.
Let's talk about something else.
All right, how about this? 630. Hi, guys. I saw yesterday. I thought they meant saw Sound of Music yesterday.
No, the movie yesterday.
Was totally disappointed.
Oh, that's too bad.
What? Why? Does it say why?
Nope. Go see Blinded by the Light.
Interesting.
You can enjoy both.
You can.
It's very possible to like both movies.
Happy birthday, Julie Andrews. Fabulous at 84. Thank you, 312.
Is she 84 years old?
Yep, she is.
Wow.
That's what People Magazine says.
Wow.
Just reading about that.
She's something.
I'm still coming off of Bruce Springsteen being 70. I'm almost now given into that fact, and now Julie Andrews is 84.
But think of that. Julie Andrews is only 14 years older than Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. You're right. Steve's right.
Can we base the day around something other than Julie Andrews? And I don't hate her. I don't have an issue with her. I just haven't seen The Sound of Music, and that exploded into a terrible thing.
I don't think you hate Julie Andrews. I just think that you're avoiding Julie Andrews, and that's not good for anybody.
It's kind of a petty jealousy. I don't really get
it. Yeah, it's petty jealousy, Wendy.
Back to yesterday.
Yes.
No, I'm just trying to help poor Wendy.
You're not going to do anything special for her birthday?
Me?
What? No, Wendy. I know you are, Mary, because we're all having a big
I'm
party
gonna
for her.
I'm going to go ride a bike with all
I'll
my brothers
this
and sisters.
Text. 847, Bill, you're so right. Yesterday is such a great movie on so many levels. Julie Andrews, a classic woman. Poor Wendy has missed so much of life.
Yep.
In her 70s rut.
Yep.
Love you, Steve and Mary.
Yep.
Oh, I just tripped on my bell bottoms.
Can I and Steve,
my fringe vest is getting
come
caught
on.
In the buttons.
Don't say that. Steve, I said this about you yesterday to my wife Terry, because we were talking about me seeing the movie and how much I enjoyed it, and I said Steve has quickly become one of those people that if he recommends something to me, whether it's a TV show or a restaurant or a movie, almost every time, if not every time, it's always good, you know. And you need a couple of people like that in your life where you go, yeah, that's a friend of mine who I'm hitting about 50%, 60% on recommendations. But Steve, I think, always comes through for me.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's
you're
a lot
welcome.
Of pressure, but I appreciate it.
I mean it.
I really value your recommendations,
well,
too,
you.
Bill.
Thank you.
I saw Shrek Forever After. She played the queen in that. Which Shrek was that? Maybe I didn't see it.
I'm not sure. Maybe Shrek 3.
Did you like Victor Victoria?
Did I know?
Okay, then.
I did not.
That's what I have everything to base on.
That was the part where Blake Edwards, who for a long time, he was best known for the Pink Panther movies, but he did some other really good movies over the years. But at some point, he just stopped making good movies. I've never seen a director with an on-off switch like Blake Edwards, where almost everything he did for a long period of time was really entertaining and good, and then nothing was entertaining, in my opinion.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, we'll book Blake Edwards for you and Julie Andrews for me. It'll be a great day.
They were married. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us by text or by phone, it's easy. 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. You were gone on Friday, Wendy, but I discussed this a little bit with Dane. As you know, this movie Joker is coming out, I think, Thursday. I'm not sure why they're releasing it on Thursday. You almost always get a Friday release, sometimes a Wednesday, but this is coming out on Thursday, Joker. And there's a lot of concerns over safety because evidently this movie is quite violent, and there's extra concern in certain cities that something bad can happen. Here's what's happened in New York. New York police will deploy officers to theaters screening the movie Joker this weekend. This according to The Hollywood Reporter. Days ago, Los Angeles police announced its department would do the same in the wake of a wave of unease from the Warner Brothers film and what it has evoked for some after three more mass shootings took place over the summer in light of the film's indirect connection to the mass shooting that took place 7 years ago. If you'll remember, when one of the other Batman movies was playing in Colorado, that's where they had the theater shooting. Will this affect your seeing or not seeing the movie?
I don't know what the answer is, Bill, but I know it's a movie, and if someone is already thinking about being a shooter, I don't know that this is going to push them over the edge.
Right.
I just have a difficult time. It's a movie. These are characters. A lot of things, unfortunately, hit very close to what's going on in the real world right now.
No question about it. They were saying, because I couldn't figure out, there have been violent movies since they started making movies. There's always an element of violence in some films. So I was trying to figure out what sets this apart. And what they were saying was, we talked about this Friday, the portrayal that Joaquin Phoenix gives, the way he acts, and he's such a loner and nothing's going right for him, they think a lot of people will recognize that in themselves and that could spur some incidents. But again, this is the sort of thing, I was thinking Robert De Niro is also in this movie. He made Taxi Driver 40 years ago, and that's the same storyline. Travis Bickle was a guy who didn't fit in society.
Most of them are.
Right.
And if Taxi Driver was coming out now, would it be fought?
I wonder. I think you'd get kind of a similar reaction to what you're getting with Joker, where people would be keeping one eye wide open as to what's going to happen. But I wonder what's going to happen. I mentioned this the other day when you weren't in. I so understand, especially that area of Colorado where the shooting took place years ago, where they would say, because parents of some of the victims have spoken out and saying, we're very uncomfortable with this movie playing in our town.
And that should be their choice.
Right, right.
I completely get that. But Warner Brothers should understand.
Wouldn't Warner Brothers be the good guy if they put out a statement saying, we so totally understand, we get it, and we don't want to do anything to make anybody uncomfortable. I know it's a business, but you also have to be, you know, the bigger person and just realize there's a sensitivity to it.
What would happen, though, like if a theater chose not to run this new Joker movie, would then Warner Brothers be hesitant to send them movies in the future? Or do
I don't
they
know
just
what the blowback would be. I know if you're a fan who wants to see the movie, I think you would just go to the next closest theater playing it. There's going to be plenty of outlets playing this movie. But I wonder if people, if their thought process of going to see the movie is going to be clouded. There's been so much publicity about the violence in this movie, and I wonder if that's going to put people off enough where they go, I don't need the aggravation. I'll wait till it comes out on, you know, on DVD or something, or on pay-per-view or another outlet. I'm curious as to what's going to happen with this in the next couple of weeks.
312-981-7200. If you don't want to see it, don't see it.
Sure.
I mean, people that are planning an attack,
right.
I don't know that this is going to be the difference of whether they do it or not.
Haven't there been countless movies where if you're somebody
on the edge,
who's right dangerously on the edge, I know something could put them off. We had a caller the other day on Friday when we were talking about it saying there's so much stimuli from video games and from music and from movies that he understands this, that maybe it's gone too far. But by the same token, you don't want to censor filmmakers or authors or producers, creators of any kind of art form. You don't want to censor them and say something you're creating could cause incidents, because you don't know. It's just such a gamble. It's a crapshoot. It could these sort of incidents can happen anywhere. There's no rhyme or reason for when or how they happen or why they happen. But I understand that there's influences. So many times when a terrible incident has happened, they go back and the person has been stimulated by things they've seen on the internet or movies or TV shows or songs. I don't know how you get around that. It's horrible, but I don't know how you get around it.
And this is a character. You want to build up the character so you can understand why maybe the Joker went awry.
Right. Yeah. It's not the Joker that we grew up with on the TV show
Nothing
Batman.
Is anymore.
It's not that
Batman has gotten dark.
Extremely.
I want the tights and the goofy pow, zing, zang, kaplooey.
Kaplooey. We want more kaplooey.
it's not campy anymore. Everything has turned to a dark edge, yeah, and people are eating it up.
Yeah.
The movie that we talked about last week when we were speaking to Dean is Natural Born Killers. When I left that movie, I'm not a violent person, but I was so amped up and felt like, you know, taking a tire iron and breaking some glass on a car. I didn't. I wouldn't. But it's just, it got me so amped up.
It gets in your head. It's so interesting to me how over the years, whenever they talk to people who are fans of violent video games, you know, there's a category of video games called shooter games, where the whole thing is, the whole video game is you going into different environments and shooting at whatever's in your way. So that wasn't a category of video games when video games started, but it's a huge category now, the shooting games. So they always talk to people who play a lot of the video games that are more violent, or watch TV shows that are more violent, or see movies that are more violent. And they always say that's how they get their frustrations out, by playing those video games. There's to them, to most of them anyway, there's no idea of, wow, it's fun doing this in video game form. Right. I bet it'd be even better to do it in real life. And yet they always use that as a possible cause for what could have set those people off, you know?
Most people in their right mind without any mental issues can figure out the difference between the two.
Yes.
If you're compromised, you know, yes, maybe you can't put reality and fantasy life separate.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I don't have an answer for it. And, you know, listen, I don't want to be insensitive. If a theater doesn't want to run the movie, especially in Colorado, I totally get that.
Yes, agreed.
Frank, what's going on?
Hey, Bill. Hey, Wendy. Bill, you may have seen this. You know, the movies, they're basically for our entertainment, whether it's fantasy or a documentary. It's for entertainment.
Sure.
And Bill, you may have seen this, where the Three Stooges, Mo Howard went on the Mike Douglas show, and he was... it being interviewed, and one of the women from the audience had said, "Don't you believe that your tactics and your entertainment purposes are quite violent for children?" And his response was, "You know, kids play cowboys and Indians, and it's all for fun. If that child takes it to a different level, then that individual has a mental problem, and that comes from somewhere else." So, you know, the audience applauded him, that say, "What we do is for entertainment."
That's so interesting. For so many reasons, but mostly because that conversation must have taken place somewhere in the 1970s, right?
Yeah, he had white hair at the time, and it was probably, like you said, early 70s.
Isn't that interesting, though? So that conversation, that back and forth as to what's too violent and how kids are influenced, that's been going on for 50 years, that means.
If not more, playing cowboys and Indians when kids were young.
Right, right.
Yeah, and this texter, you know, we all played Mario as kids. I don't see too many people stomping on turtles.
Good point. Right. Very struck point.
That is true, and I'm not saying people with mental issues or disturbances do these things. You know, there's a psychotic behavior behind it, and many people with mental illness do not go this route.
Right.
So I'm not saying that, but a lot of people are saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't have. I think Warner Brothers is irresponsible in even making this dark, violent movie. Now parents have to worry about their teenagers or young adults seeing this movie with this tick of violence.
But that's what I mean. That's my biggest fear is that filmmakers or authors or creators of any art form will be influenced by it and say, "Well, we can't take chances like this anymore because, you know, you'll get an incident that, you know, is really so out of your control. I don't know how you handle that."
Then,
from my understanding, in China or in the Asian markets, the shoot 'em up games are more popular and they're even more violent than what they have in the States. And the culture doesn't have the issues with gun violence like we do here.
Isn't that crazy?
That's interesting.
It's a stat that almost works against itself when you present it that way. That's so strange. Frank, thank you for the phone call.
We appreciate it. And finally, a text. The Marvel movies are based in fantasy with aliens and monsters. The Batman and Joker movies have tried hard to ground their films in reality. Good or bad, that is an important fact.
Very accurate. Yeah.
I don't know. Are you going to see it?
I'm so anxious to see it. And I don't know if this, I don't know how this will change the movie experience. Imagine going to a movie theater and there's police officers as you're entering the theater or standing there during the movie. That's so scary to me. I mean, I know for some people that they go, no, that make it a safer experience, you know, but it's just so hard to focus when you got, you know, police officers strolling up and down the aisle of a movie theater. I'm so not used to that.
I mean, if that's how it becomes, we will get used to it, but
I guess
it shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's a Tech Tuesday. We'll be talking to Bridget Carey a little bit different time today. We're going to do it at 11:35 because we have an in-studio guest at 11:05.
Rich Scheidner.
He's really funny. Yeah. I was watching a bunch of old stuff last night. He has a book out. He's really funny.
Yep. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffenis, Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us during the show, 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. Wendy, a beer vendor in Miami has gotten in trouble for something very, very strange. He charged a fan over $700 for two beers during the Miami Dolphins game the other day.
The big question is, did the fan pay it?
It says there's criminal activity, and then there's this, charging a fan over $700 for two beers at a Miami Dolphins game. According to reports, 33-year-old Nathaniel Collier was arrested for charging a fan $724 for two beers during the Dolphins game against the Chargers on Sunday. It says the prices of food and beverages at sporting events are often obscenely marked up.
Not like that.
Not like that. But this crime exists on an entirely different level. I truly wonder what could have caused Collier to do something like this, let alone think that he could get away with it. That's the thing. There's that moment where you order the beers and you take one and you give one to your friend. And then they say, oh, by the way, that'll be $724. And you go, oh, no, it won't. There's no way.
So do you pass the beer back?
Yeah, take it back. I don't want it.
There are times I would pay. Sometimes you have to wait so long for a beer vendor to come and you don't feel like going to get one on your own. But
not this much.
That's a little much.
Not this much. So you tell me, the beer at most sporting events is how much? Between $10 and $15 now? Is that about average?
I have to be honest with you. I have no idea because I know I want them and I just pay for them.
I think you're going to pay at most major sporting events somewhere between 10 and 15 for a beer that should cost two or three. But you say to yourself, well, this is my option. If I want one, I have to pay whatever they're charging.
And it comes right to your seat. Come on.
Comes right to your seat.
That's a dream come true.
But how did Collier decide? Because what you want to do in a situation like this is come up with a number. If you're going to take advantage of the people in your section, you can. But it has to be a fairly realistic number, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like if you say, let's say the beers are $15 each. If you said that'll be $45, that'll be $50, then there might be some thought. But if you go at $724.
Yeah, how did he figure on that amount?
I don't know.
Well, did he jack up a credit card receipt or what is it?
It doesn't say that.
It had to be how it happened, right?
It doesn't say that, but it says the Dolphins' historically atrocious play has something to do with it. They're now 0-4 with their loss against the Chargers. It's a shame that a small number of Dolphins fans who are actually willing to show up are now getting screwed over by the vendors who are supposed to be helping them feel numb to the pain of being a Dolphins fan. It doesn't say in any way, shape, or form, Steve, how he attempted to pull this off. But even if he did it by credit card, you would still see that, wouldn't you?
He was arrested, faces charges of third degree. I just lost it. Oh, come on. I don't need this ad. Look, the Dolphins are terrible.
Yes,
but,
yes. This was their closest game, and they lost by 20 points.
He was, all right, the fan was charged $724 for two beers on his credit card by a beer vendor looking to get some extra money.
But again, you have to be fairly realistic if you're going to try to jump the price. You have to do it within the boundaries of believability.
Like $100, you'd look and go, God, that's a lot,
even
but
that.
Whatever. 33-year-old Nathaniel Collier was arrested and faces charges of third-degree grand theft and possession of a skimming device. So he had his own skimmer.
I guess, yeah.
What else did he charge to that poor guy? The arrest affidavit said the vendor used a Square reader to scam the victim. Police said he used the personal card reader to charge over $700 for two beers at the Miami Dolphins game.
Don't you get an alert right away if you... Well, I guess you have
you can set it
at different prices. Yeah.
Right. Anything over $700,
right,
you'd get an alert.
Right. You know what this reminds me of is about once every other year, there's a story about somebody who makes counterfeit money and goes to Walmart and tries to pay with a $10,000 bill.
Yeah, again, you got to keep it in scale.
Right.
A fake 20? Maybe you'll get through.
Our advice to you, the scammers out there, make your scam believable. Don't make your scam so unbelievable that there's a red flag.
Police say Collier was taken into custody without any incident, and there's no doubt he will learn his lesson for messing with fans at a game. I don't know. He's not going to have that job anymore,
so
one's going to have to worry about it.
He's done.
This is an interesting fact as we find out more about the $700 beer tab. Hi, Chris.
How's it going?
What's up, Chris?
Nothing. They said in the news that, yeah, he did get an alert. He was sitting there drinking that beer, and his credit card company texted him or something, said, hey, what'd you just spend $724 on? And he looked down the aisle and figured out that he just bought two very expensive beers.
Did this guy do this to anyone else in the stadium, or was it a one-time thing?
They said, they're talking about it yesterday, that maybe he did this once or twice a Sunday or whatever, that they're looking into his records, that maybe he tried it once a Sunday or whatever. Not a bad payoff. You
know? I know, but Chris, here's the deal. Do like 50 people at an additional $50. Don't do one time for $700.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, you take your roll in the dice. That's 50 more people that can catch it instead of one stupid, drunken Dolphins fan.
You've thought a lot about this, Chris, haven't you?
Not a bad gig. If you can get.
Thanks, Chris. So much. Have a good one.
Do you remember a couple of years ago we had this cybersecurity guy on who said there was some company, and they had this brilliant plan where they sent a whole bunch of people, they charged a whole bunch of people accounts, like $6.18 more for no particular service. It just said service rendered, and it was $6.18. The reason is nobody would check for a charge of $6.18. Like, if you do a charge like this where it's $724, yeah, whoever got charged that on their card, they're going to do some due diligence and find out why they got charged that. But for most of us, if you see that on your Visa or MasterCard, you just go, oh, I don't know what it was, but why even bother? It's $6.18. But they made hundreds of thousands of dollars doing this.
And I thought he also said that their initial charge is they put it through for like $6, like, yeah, you said, to see if it goes through. And again, if there's no dispute, then
they
maybe
can do it more,
yeah,
often.
They can keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I don't understand how those skimmers work. Every time I go to the gas station, I always touch the little slot that I'm putting my credit card into. But I don't know what to look for, really, other than if something's loose.
Well,
and wouldn't my credit card or debit card alert me and say something, this, you know, did you do this transaction?
I know it's not exclusive to ATM machines, but I do know that a lot of times that's where the scam takes place, where they're somehow able to hook it up, where they make an imprint of your card. But I keep thinking that now, I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but by me, if you're using a parking meter and you're throwing your card in,
mm-hmm,
I don't know, like you, I don't know what to look for,
right,
but I wonder if somebody's figured out how to do this off of an ATM, why wouldn't they also know how to do it off of a parking meter?
I think they would do it off of anything, but...
Right.
You know, again, what are you supposed to look for? We need to find that out.
Didn't you feel safer, though, when you came upon a parking meter that just took quarters because you said, well,
no,
there's...
I never have quarters on me.
Oh.
I hate that. You're the only one who has money on you.
Just quarters.
What, do you have a roll of quarters in your pocket,
you
or are you just happy to be on the air?
What if a pinball machine just shows up somewhere? You got to have quarters.
You saying that, I actually believe.
I mean it. I totally mean it.
Although you need a whole roll of quarters to play pinball now.
But the old, right, you do. But the old days of, you know, you'd always find a meter that still had 21 minutes, 25 minutes on it.
It's a good day.
But now you're putting your license plate in there, so every transaction is a new transaction, and it's impossible. You know, I liked it so much better the old way where you would just throw quarters in there.
Okay, but riddle me this,
yes.
Joker.
Yes.
If you don't have quarters, we did.
What
we,
do you do?
When we were in Marina Del Rey, there was a parking meter by right near the beach that we were going to.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, forget it. It's a rental car. Let's just, you know, forget
right.
it. And Jim's
right.
like, we can't do that. And the kids were like, Mom, Dad, nice life lesson. Thank you. So there was a little vendor guy who had a cart. And I said, do you have change for a dollar? And he just looked at me and laughed. And he's like, no.
Yeah, not anymore.
So Jim actually went somewhere, went to a mini mart or something, and bought a can of soda and came back with quarters, and we fed the meter. But that is so inconvenient.
In the change compartment in my car, I would say there's roughly 30 to 40 quarters, and they've been there for a long time now because most of the parking meters don't take them anymore. I used to keep a heavy supply, even more than I have now, but now it's all by credit card. I always feel like somebody could be taking an imprint on my credit card. Every time I do a parking meter, I'm nervous about that.
Well, Doug has a solution to the whole skimmer thing. What is it, Doug?
Hey, so good morning.
Morning.
So anybody, and most of them are not informed on this enough, but if you use Google Wallet or Apple Pay, it actually creates a fake credit card number that goes back to a computer that relates it to your real credit card number. Now, this credit card number cannot be used unless it comes from your phone and it comes from a phone. So if anybody tries to put it on a card or tries to buy anything on Amazon or anything like that with it, they can't use it. I've even done my debit card on there, and my ATM at my bank has the touchless pay, the NFC, so I can actually use my Google Wallet to draw money out of my bank account if I need.
What if you lose your phone? Then they have access to everything, don't they?
No, not true. Not true. Because mine requires both facial identity and thumbprint on my Google Wallet.
Oh, that's better. That's a little easier.
Bill could never figure that out.
No.
He's just smiling.
I used it everywhere in Rome.
Really?
Everywhere in Rome. Yeah, I didn't want to get hacked in Rome because we're going to be in Europe for another week and a half.
Yeah.
And if we got hacked there, there's no way of getting a card back.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I use it everywhere, and my wife has finally decided. Now, my wife and daughter are Apple. I've got an Android, and, you know, she's finally decided, hey, it's a possibility. Maybe she should go for Apple Pay, but, you know, I don't know how well that works in Europe. I know Android is huge in Europe, and it works everywhere. I never pulled my car out of a wallet all through Europe.
We will show Bill a YouTube video on how to install it. It's not that hard. Google Pay or iPay. We thank you so much, Doug. And we have some tips of what to look for on a skimmer. Can we take a quick break
absolutely.
And come back and find out about it?
All right. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wow, that was a lot. Good thing you're a professional. Wendy, we're telling the story about this guy, Nathaniel Collier. He's 33 years old. He works as a vendor during Miami Dolphin games. He charged a guy, a fan, over $700, $724 to be exact, for two beers during the game against the Chargers, ironically the Chargers, on Sunday. I know that they make wine that's really, really expensive, and I know they make champagne that's really, really expensive, but there isn't a beer in the world that costs $725, is there?
I doubt it.
I don't think there is. So this guy paid $724 for a couple of Miller Genuine Drafts. Good move.
Well, he didn't know at the time.
It's so not on him.
We were talking about the skimmers, and skimming devices are installed for a short period of time, sometimes only a few hours, says the FBI. They look very similar to the original card reader and fit right over it. And here's what to look for before you swipe.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to you, every time I stop to get gas, you stop every day, but you pay cash, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I don't know how you go through life in a cash society when no one else has cash.
It's been a challenge. It really has been a challenge.
Some places won't even take your cash because the transaction takes too long.
There have been places that have said no to my cash. We do not accept legal tender.
That is the craziest thing.
It's so strange. And it happened overnight. Like, it used to be cash was king. If you had money in your wallet, you could buy stuff. But those days are over. Money? No, thank you.
I check every time I fill up the tank, which is usually once a week for sure, sometimes twice a week if I go on a joyride.
Oh, yeah.
Check for
you
any...
and Louise.
Thank you for letting me be Thelma.
Yeah.
Check for any loose parts. I do this every time, but
do
again...
Do you have any loose parts, Wendy?
I do.
Yeah.
But you're checking for the skimmer. Inspect the credit card reader before using it. Be suspicious if you see anything loose, crooked, or damaged. Tug at it if possible. It shouldn't wiggle. I do this every time.
Yeah? Wait, so explain that part to me. I don't use ATMs, as you probably know. So you go to your ATM machine.
You've never used one?
I don't think I have.
Well, I mean, you've never paid for anything with a credit card? In a slot?
Yeah. I have. Yeah, I have done that.
You're such a naive little boy sometimes. It's sweet.
Well,
I know your wife gives you $20 a day.
Yeah. I'm lucky I get that. If I were her, I would have a talk with me about that. We're overpaying you. You get $11 a day. Live on that.
All right, what's your question?
So when you go to your ATM machine, and you say ATM, I guess, because the M is machine. When you go to your ATM, you see something on the machine, some loose plastic part?
There's a slot that you... Are you serious?
Yeah.
There's a little slot that you slide your card in.
Right.
Some banks now make you leave your card in there, which I don't like because I just kind of like to swipe it very quickly and put it back in my wallet.
But couldn't you tell if there was an additional plastic part over that? You couldn't discern that that was in existence? It would seem easy to me.
Well, that's why I jiggle and check for wiggling things. I know. Okay,
yep,
I jiggle.
Well,
I jiggle it.
Yeah.
That's not better.
Yep.
Also, check for scratching around the card slot, adhesive tape, or glue residue. Skimmers are often attached to an ATM or terminal by nothing more than double-sided tape for easy removal.
Wow.
So, you know, I really do kind of jiggle the little slot.
Just to make sure there's nothing extra on the machine.
Yeah, but I don't even... No, if I'd notice if it was.
Mm-hmm.
Look for hidden cameras at ATM. Skimmers are sometimes used in conjunction with hidden cameras that record you as you enter your PIN, says the FBI. Cover the PIN pad while you type your PIN as if someone were looking over your shoulder, because someone might be.
Don't all ATMs at this point have a camera or two in there recording transactions? They do, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're looking for an additional one other than the one that they've already set up?
No, but this would be a camera looking at your hands, not at your
face. Oh, from behind you, yeah.
Wow.
If possible, advises the FBI, go to an ATM inside a bank branch and avoid ATMs in tourist areas.
Mm-hmm.
What about in a bar where there's just a machine and there's no bank name on it, but it's like $80 service charge, but you need cash.
A generic one?
To pay for your $700 beers. What do you do? And also check out the keypad, which again I do. Criminals can use a fake keypad to record your keystrokes as you enter your PIN. If it moves or looks suspicious, don't use it.
Oh.
And it says if you do notice something, call 911 and report it. Hey, there's an ATM that's looking pretty bad here.
Yeah.
I don't, and here's another tip, and
yes,
we learned this from our ethical hacker that we always have on.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name for the life of me right now.
All right.
Jasmine will help. He said when you go to put your card in the slot and
yes,
it says credit or debit, to always choose credit.
Because it's insured that way? Is that why?
It's insured, and then you don't have to worry about punching in your PIN number. It just processes, even though it's your debit card, it's either a Visa or a MasterCard as well. And Jordan Goodman, no, what's his name? The ethical hacker.
Jason Glassberg, sorry.
Yes.
Jason Glassberg is the ethical hacker.
Yes. He said to use it, it'll say, is this a debit card? Click no.
Right.
And then just go through your transaction like it's a regular Visa or MasterCard.
Oh.
So there's no punching in your PIN. Even when you're checking out at Walmart or Best Buy or something,
yeah. That
same thing happens. Punch in your PIN number, just ask the clerk, how do I cancel this?
Part, yeah.
And right, it's not a universal color, because I know, like at Home Depot, I think you hit the yellow button to make it go through, or it's a red to do it as credit. But just ask the clerk and stop using your PIN number.
All right. That's fine.
All right. Quick break. And then coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's on WGN Radio.
Steve, thanks very much. One of our favorite comedians has returned. Rich Scheidner is here. He's doing comedy at Zany's all this week. Go to zanys.com. But tonight, Rich, a very special show.
Yeah.
Very different from anything that's ever been done at Zany's. Tell everybody what you're doing.
I'm doing a show on the history of stand-up comedy.
How cool is this? I'm sorry. Yeah. I like to learn stuff.
7 o'clock, the history of seven. Yeah, it just, it's, you know, I got, you know, I was involved with stand-up comedy my whole career.
Right.
And Phyllis Diller, I became friends with Phyllis Diller, and she was big on the history. I mean, she was into it.
Yeah. I loved and her. I want to like, be
you,
her.
Oh, she was great. She was great, man. She was really, you know, she was wild.
Out there.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But cool. She was the first female star stand-up comic. She broke through that way. I talk about her. I talk about the first a lot of people, like the first stand-up comic ever. It's an original American art form.
This started, I already
1861.
Know. 1861 was the beginning of stand-up comedy.
A guy named Artemus Ward out of Cleveland.
And how did what Artemus Ward did back in 1861, how did that evolve into what we have today? Was it similar at all?
It was one person going on stage, one person facing an audience. Just the only purpose he had was to make them laugh. It was so radical. Because they used to do these lectures back then. Remember, this is no TV, no radio. So the entertainment, people go around and a lot of times, not plays or little dance things, but there were lectures, informative lectures. Right? They come and teach you something about the new continent of Australia or that slavery was bad or drinking was bad.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And then he says, I'm going to go up and do one of these lectures, but I'm just going to make them laugh as long as I can, as hard as they can. That's all I'm going to do.
So when Artemus Ward in 1861 said, what part of the chicken are the McNuggets? Did people have any idea what he was talking about?
He had, you know, look, a lot of his jokes obviously were, like he did jokes of the day. The jokes don't travel in time like music
right,
does.
Of course.
Right? But he had jokes that, so he said, we must all learn and live within our means, even if we have to borrow money to do so. So it's still funny.
Yes.
Right? I mean, he had jokes that were funny, but he had jokes that you have heard these things before, but you didn't know this was his joke. He said, if a man says it's not the money the thing, but the principle of the thing, it's the money of the thing.
Wow. Wow.
That was his.
It's a lot for 1861.
You have that material because it's curious to know what some of the first jokes were.
Yeah. So he would go on stage and he'd do this, and young people, right? This is the beginning of the war, Civil War. He was an immediate hit. I mean, he was a huge star then.
It was different?
It was so different, radical. But older people didn't dig it because they'd come out of the lecture to go, yeah, I laughed, but I didn't learn anything.
Oh.
It's a silly waste of time.
Yeah.
It was radical. See, comedy was only a little part of anything. If you did a little play or something, do a little bit. But the thoughts back then, if you were laughing, you were laughing at somebody, and the laugh too much was being rude. So he really broke through and did something that was totally radical.
And where would he do this, Rich? Because comedy clubs, obviously.
No. He did it in theaters all over.
Horse stables.
Sometimes. Really. He did a Wild West tour during the Civil War because it got so bad back east, you know, that people couldn't even laugh. The Civil War got so bad by 63, 64. So he went back. He went out west, right, to the Wild West, truly Wild West. And he would do these mining camps and all. This guy comes and he says, I want to do this mining camp. And he goes, there's nobody here. He says, well, once we light the bonfire, they'll all know something's happening down here. So, you know, it's like he went to some weird, wild places.
When did it become considered an art form where people would say, we're going to seek out comedy? Was that around the turn of the century?
Well, vaudeville comedy started moving in the theaters in vaudeville. You know, that was because back after Artemus Ward was doing it. You know, and he died in England. England is the one that when he went over to England, they said, this is an original American art form. We've never seen anything like this. They flipped for him. He died there, tuberculosis, when he was 32.
Oh, God. Man.
And they had a state funeral for him. I mean, royalty came. They flipped for this guy. And after that, there was really nobody doing it. You know, Twain was doing the lecture thing, like the Ward was doing. And he had a big name as a writer, so he could draw people. But most comics were trying to do it in saloons, and you really couldn't do it in a saloon. Saloons were really just brothels with men in them and drinking. And you know, they'd really shoot guns off if they didn't like you or throw stuff at the stage.
Wow.
So there were teams that would hit each other with sticks. That's how slapstick came into being.
Yeah.
They would just beat on each other for entertainment. That was basically...
That's the literal term.
Yeah, literal term. Oh, they would hit each other, you know, and...
It was a human version of the Punch and Judy puppet
show. Exactly.
But it was real
people hitting each other. So slapstick, but so there wasn't what we call stand-ups doing the saloons too much. It just didn't work. Vaudeville opened up and they wanted a family entertainment, bring everybody in.
And was it happening in other countries simultaneously?
No. You know, we have, I think, because we have the First Amendment, we have freedom of speech.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. You know, in England, they would shut you down if they didn't like what you were saying.
Sure.
Okay? So we had that here. We were also a new country, and so our culture wasn't locked in. Everything was changing and new, and we were evolving fast.
Right.
And also, I think because America's always loved that rugged individual thing. Like, yeah. That's a part of our mythology. Like, yeah. One person going out there and doing something, accomplishing something. Sure. You know, Charles Lindbergh or whatever, you know. And so I think that was part of it, too. That we always like to watch one person up there really going for it.
Yeah. Right.
This component of your work where you talk about the history of stand-up, this is a relatively new thing, right? You just started this
Los Angeles? About 10 years ago, I started really researching it.
Yeah.
You know, before Phyllis Diller died, and I got into it, and I found Artemus Ward through reading Twain stuff. Mm-hmm. He talked about him, and so I started, okay, let me look at all these people, like how, you know, because some of these people, when I was young, you know, guys like Milton Berle. Now, people might not remember Milton Berle, but he was the first big star on television and a huge stand-up. But he was an old man when I came along.
Yeah.
So I thought, you see somebody, think they're always an old man. You never imagine them being young, right? But when he was young, he used to get thrown out of vaudeville for working dirty, what we called, dirty, right? But it wasn't really dirty today. Do you want to hear one of the jokes he got thrown out for?
Yeah. Am I going to have to use the dumb button?
Not at all. So here's a joke he'd say. He said, a girl said to me, "Are you looking at my knees?" I said, "No, I'm way above that." That got him tossed out of vaudeville, right? Right? Risque. He said, "I told this girl I like to take an experienced girl home." She said, "I'm not experienced." He said, "You're not home yet." That got him tossed out. So he was a young guy, like 20, 22 years old, doing this stuff in vaudeville. He was pushing the edge, you know?
Yeah.
Comics have to go over the line to find the line, right? So that's what he was doing. And every generation has that happen.
What about the line now? Because things have changed.
I watched Dave Chappelle, and I love watching him move that line around, man. I mean, they go after it. I mean, you can't say, like people talk about being politically correct as like a problem with comedy,
mm-hmm.
but it's always been that way. Always been that way. Back in vaudeville time, people used to mock each other, you know, back in the early part of the 20th century, because of immigrants, right? So they would mock each other. They called all the Irish jokes were about Irish being drunks, and the Jewish jokes were about being cheap or that sort of thing. So they had, in Cleveland, the Jewish religious leaders and the Catholic Church got together to protest vaudeville comics. So that's political correct back then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't like that they were doing all these ethnic jokes. Back in this is like 1900s, like 1905, 1906, they had these protests.
But did it change anything?
No, because people were laughing. As long as people are, you can say whatever you want as long as people are laughing.
There is an article in the Hollywood Reporter this week that talks about a civil war in comedy right now, and they pointed at the situation with Shane Gillis, the guy that got hired by Saturday Night Live, and then 4 days later got fired.
Right.
So they said on one side of the line in the civil war of comedy are comedians who say, it's freedom of speech, and that's why we do this. On the other side, it's people saying there are elements of that, but it's just a guy being racist for the sake of being racist. There's no humor involved. Where do you stand on this?
The marketplace will shake it out. I'm up for freedom of speech.
Yeah.
So the marketplace will shake it out. There, if you're racist and people understand it, there are comics who will form for racist crowds. You don't think, like, every group has a comedian.
Yeah. Right?
Every group has a comedian. So you don't think the KKK have comedians come and perform for them?
Yeah.
But I mean,
I'm sure they're funny.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm just saying you can't stop it. You can't stop it. But the marketplace will shake it out. That's my
Should
feeling.
He have been fired from Saturday Night Live, do you think?
You know,
it's a hard call, isn't it?
It's a hard call. Whether you know, again, and I'm not sure if it wasn't that it wasn't racist at the time. I think a lot of times we make this like say the Kate Smith thing, right? Remember the Kate Smith thing?
God Bless America.
Right. So they go, she did
Kate Smith. You
Kate Smith? Yeah.
Bill.
Well, she did. Okay. Oh, she did a song. I guess it was a darky song or something like that.
Horrible.
Horrible, right?
It was horrible.
By today's standards. But back then, it wasn't considered bad. I mean, we're judging people culturally by things that were like years ago.
And now, we've evolved.
Hopefully. Right? But how can we expect them to evolve 90 years ago?
But this guy,
at that time,
Shane Gillis, his comments were from
this
a year
was
ago.
Recent. I'm just saying, that's recent. So it's a different situation.
I didn't watch it. You watched it. And, you know, like those roasts, I'm not a roast girl because I'm offended, but I'm laughing. And if it's funny, I'm sorry, it's funny. Laughing is a reaction that just comes out of you. So if it's funny, it's going to get a reaction. This wasn't funny, you said.
No, that's the problem. And I agree with you, it wasn't. And again, I agree with you on the roast. Those roast things are brutal. They're brutal, man. And they're meant to be.
Yes.
Right?
You know what you're getting.
Exactly. So I'm just saying that's the marketplace. If I'm paying money to go see a roast, I should expect
you know,
raunch.
To be pushed. Exactly. Raunch, to push, to be offensive. That's what you're paying for. So I think the marketplace shakes it out. But in a public forum, and again, you, once you get out, you know this as well as I do, better than I do, you get advertisers involved, you have to run a different line. You're running a different operation. So Saturday Night Live is a different operation.
And we were talking about this, too. If you're paying money to go to a club to see this guy, Shane Gillis, do his act, you are either familiar with him or you've chosen to go. Putting him on, you know, national TV on your television every night, then you don't have a choice.
Exactly. It's a whole different operation. And if I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I don't know him. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he feels about it or what happened there. But you have, it's all content. I think, look, I used to tell stories, and I got heckled. I got heckled. Like, this is a story I told. Mm-hmm. I got heckled in Beaumont, Texas, when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
I was down there working Houston, 1981. They fly me over to Beaumont. I'm doing this show, and this guy sitting down front, this is the early part of the comedy boom, right? And he says, do some N jokes, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like taken aback, because I mean, it's not like I've never heard the word before, but I've never heard anybody yell that out in public mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
So I try to slide off it when I came back. I said, listen, man, I think everybody should laugh at their own kind. I mean, let black people laugh at black people, and Jewish people do Jewish jokes. That's why I laugh at a-holes. That's how I got out of it. Right? I slide it out. Mm-hmm. Right? I think I'm doing a little depth. He comes right back. He's not letting up. Like, he's yelling, dude, I said, dude, like, I'm not prepared. Like, I didn't come prepared.
Yeah, wow.
Don't you have any jokes?
Yeah.
Right? Wow.
So it's a whole thing. Now, I've told that story. This actually happened. So I told that story one time, right? And a guy, I used the N-word. I used it.
Yeah.
And quoting the guy in the club,
yeah.
Right? So another guy heard me say that, and he tells somebody it was on social media. He goes, you know, Scheidner's a racist. I heard him use the N-word. You see what I mean? He took what I said out of context.
Yeah.
And slammed me for it. Yeah. So you got to understand sometimes, you know, my lesson from that was I don't use the word at all now.
Yeah,
even quoting safer. That guy,
yep. Right?
Because I got whacked for it in that way.
All right, Rich, hold that thought. Rich Scheidner's here. He's performing at Zanies all this week. Tonight, a special show. It's the history of comedy. Go to Zanies.com. We'll pick this up in a minute. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN. Rich Scheidner's here. He's performing at Zanies all this week. Tonight, a very special show. It's a lecture. I guess you qualify this as a lecture, right, Rich?
It's a show. It's funny. I mean, I got great funny stories, and you heard some of the material. I mean, I do material from comics all through the ages, all the way through, and they're funny. They're funny. I picked out the ones that could still work today.
Has anyone influenced stand-up comedy more than George Carlin and Richard Pryor? Those are the two biggies.
Recent one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people. Every generation, somebody's new. Bob Hope influenced comics back then.
Sure.
Jack Benny influenced comics back then. There's comics today who are in the line of other people, right? I mean, I'm sure Bill Burr is influencing comics right now.
No question.
But he is the New York wise guy kind of character of a guy named Frank Fay, who influenced Bob Hope, influenced, again, you look at Jay Leno or David Letterman, they were like New York wise guys.
Yeah.
And then Bill Burr. So it all goes through the line. I mean, people are influenced by other people.
We got a couple of texts. Now, you mentioned Phyllis Diller, who is my idol. I want to be the Phyllis Diller of the 2000s. I need to work on it a little more. Yeah. But 773 says, Moms Mabley did stand-up before Phyllis Diller.
Absolutely. I said Phyllis Diller was the first female stand-up star. And Moms was also relegated to the black circuit. She worked in the black vaudeville and then in what they called the Chitlin circuit of comedy clubs and theaters in the black circuit. She didn't work white audiences, even getting allowed to get in front of white audiences until like the late 60s, 70s.
Unreal.
And Dick Gregory here in Chicago broke the color line. He was sort of the Jackie Robinson of stand-up comedy. He became the first black comic to work in front of white audiences here at the Playboy Club back in 60.
Also, Lenny Bruce doesn't get enough credit for what he did for stand-up, like influencing Pryor and Carlin, as you mentioned.
Well, did he? I mean, I said comics have to go over the line to find the line, but Lenny went so far over the line, he didn't know where the line was. I mean, he was out there, and of course, I mean, I talk about his. I have a different take than most people in terms of what he really got in trouble for. In terms of they said he got in trouble for, and what they were arresting for was obscenity. You know, using four-letter words and other words in the nightclubs. But that's not really what they went after him for. And I talk about that. And I talk about Lenny. I mean, he was a very funny guy. He was a funny guy. I mean, he broke down. Remember the mother-in-law jokes? They were all big in the 40s and 50s. Sure. Mother-in-law jokes, right? Because most of the time, mother-in-laws were living with you. There were multi-generational families going home, so that's why they were so popular. And it started to change. But Lenny, early in his career, he flipped the mother-in-law joke. I mean, he really pretty much destroyed it with one joke. He said, yeah, because all comics would say how tough it was to have mother-in-laws. You know, they were paying the butt, and they were destroying their marriage. And Lenny said, yeah, my mother-in-law, she ruined our marriage. My wife came home from work early and found us in bed one night.
One of the saddest aspects about him, Lenny Bruce, was at some point later in his career, when he would take to the stage, he wasn't doing stand-up anymore. He was just talking about his legal troubles.
Yeah, it happens to comics. And Mort Saul would get involved in the Warren Report, you know, talking about the Kennedy assassination. Yep. You get lost. They start forgetting what their mission is up there. Like, you're licensed to get up there. My license to be up there is to be funny.
Right.
When I stop being funny, my license is revoked.
Yep.
Right. They're there to hear you laugh and hear you joke. And Lenny got caught up in talk about his trial. He started fighting them on their terms and forgot that his sense of humor was his weapon.
Yeah.
That was his weapon. And he dropped his weapon and started trying to fight him on legal terms.
Right.
It was sad, yeah.
Who doesn't get their credit that is so due to them? Who in the world of comedy has influenced
the most
many?
Underrated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a guy from my generation that I think was so funny, and I don't think people have seen him as being funny. How funny he was Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about this Sunday night. I did this show in Los Angeles. I did the show I'm doing tonight in Los Angeles Sunday night, and the place was packed with comics. And so somebody asked me that question, and I was like kind of stunned because I hadn't thought about who was really underrated, right? And there was a guy named Ricky Craig Jr. from Vaudeville who wrote for Bob Hope. He died young of tuberculosis, and he kind of invented some joke forms. But then somebody said, how about Gilbert Gottfried? And I thought, oh, Gilbert was so funny.
Absolutely.
I mean, in New York, nobody wanted to follow him.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to follow him. I mean, there was a paying spot. Like, you wanted money so bad.
Yeah. Right?
And it was like $25 on a weekend. It was like, $25. My rent was $115, man, right? This is like 1979 in New York. And people would just cancel all the time. They go, oh, I got the spot after Gilbert. They wouldn't even show.
Right.
So I started taking that spot, but you couldn't follow him. He had a character called Tony, a Brooklyn comic. He put this really cheesy jacket on. And he turned around, he started hitching his pants. He goes, hey, all right, yeah, all right, okay, here we go. All right, with the jokes. Why did the chicken cross the road? And he cursed like crazy. Who cares? It was a chicken. Right? He's throwing an F-bomb in him to thing, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey, why'd the moron throw the clock out the window? Because he's a moron. Right? And he was deconstructing comedy. He was like just taking jokes apart. So if you want to up after him and just try to do regular stand-up.
Impossible.
They'd look at you like, and then we just saw Tony, you know.
Yeah.
But he did something. He'd take a bar stool and hold it up to his waist with the bar stool, the bottom sticking out, right? And he'd call it Quadra D.
Yeah.
Quadra D. And he'd do a parody. It was a movie like Jaws. He goes, you know, and he'd do all these characters talking about this creature killing people in the seaside. And just because Jaws was a big movie in the
70s. Sure. Yeah.
But you couldn't, and he's doing all these compressions within the characters. And
so original.
It was so original.
He was
so original, man.
We only
have
a couple seconds.
He did, first guy I ever saw, he'd take a piece of rope, hold it behind his head and go, mental floss, mental floss.
Through the years.
Right? And now I've heard that thing a million
sure.
times.
People talking
about mental floss, right?
Yeah.
That was Gilbert.
We have a minute, but I want to throw another name at you that I always consider the most underrated comic I've ever seen, Robert Klein. I just think he's...
You know what?
He's brilliant.
He influenced my generation as much as anybody.
Yeah.
You want to talk... That's a good point.
Yeah.
I saw him in 1974 at American University. This is the truth. I fell out of the bleacher.
Yeah.
I was in bleacher. It was a bleacher. The gymnasium was packed, right, in American University. And I was laughing so hard, I slipped under. I slipped, you know, you fall down. I fell down.
Yeah.
I fell. I couldn't control myself laughing.
Yeah.
He was the funniest guy.
So good. And he could come at you with so many different directions.
You know, he'd made smart comedy okay.
Yes.
I mean, he was like a college-educated guy, and he made no bones about it. I mean, he did, you know, references that were collegiate, really.
Yep.
I mean, he made it okay, because before that, comics were like, you'd hide the fact you were. There's a funny story, you know, Bob Newhart's from here, right? So Bob Newhart was a I think a Loyola graduate.
Yeah.
Right, Loyola graduate. So they're doing a, after he made it big, and he was huge, right? Early 60s when he broke big with his album. They're doing a talk show, David Susskind, one of those early 60s talk show. And Buddy Hackett and some of these old school comics are on the show, right, with this young Bob Newhart. And so the interviewer brings out that Bob Newhart was a college graduate. And Buddy Hackett, like he goes, you could see him on the show, he goes, what? You're a college graduate? You mean you don't have to do this? Like, they were, like, stunned. You don't have to do this stupid stuff?
That's perfect. Rich, it's always good to see you.
Thank you.
This sounds great.
Yeah.
I hope. I wish you guys could come. I know you work and everything, but early, but I
this sounds so much fun. It's now this part, the History of Comedy, is only tonight.
Just tonight.
Regular stand-up the rest of the week. Uh-huh. Go to zanies.com. All the information is there. Thanks, Rich.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
Ladies
Thanks,
and gentlemen,
Wendy.
Not the Ramones. he was saying how
you love that story.
You know, he opened up for the Ramones just to get your $50. Yeah. So closing for Gilbert Gottfried, just do it to take the money. Just hope you're making more now.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. That music means it is a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us right now, CNET senior editor Bridget Carey. Wow, this is just foreshadowing, because right as you called, I just got some fraud alerts on my phone and my credit card debt. I am getting sick of technology, so I don't know what to tell you, Bridget.
Well, it's not just, you know, the 1st of October. Today is Techtober. Do you know that, guys?
No. What does this mean, Bridget?
And okay, so if you're sick of technology, this is not a good month for you. Because it is just we are swarmed with gadget news, because every company is trying to get their product out, releasing it this month or having an event this month, right in time to launch everything for the holidays. So it kicks off today with announcements from GoPro. Everyone's favorite camera maker. They're having new GoPro cameras. One, we have a review out today of, it's called the Hero 8 Black. You know, these are popular action cameras, but there's a couple of changes now. They come out with one every year or so that has some upgrades. And this time around, there's no frame that you have to stick the camera into to be able to mount it. It kind of includes the ability to mount the camera itself the way it's built. And that makes it easier to access charging, access your memory card. You don't have to, like, keep popping a case on and off of it. And it's got some other cool tricks like you would expect out of an action camera. But this time around, if you're running with it, let's say you have it in your hand and you're doing a video where you're chasing your kid, it'll eliminate that up and down motion that can make you kind of nauseated as you're watching a video as someone's running.
Oh, the NYPD blue effect. That's what we call that, where you get nauseous.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool tricks inside. If you want to read more about it, we got it all listed. I mean, if you're looking for action cameras, you know, they have a new one, and it's $400.
All right. I want to know the person that buys this camera. Obviously, this is someone that's into adventure, who maybe goes hiking, climbs a mountain, goes zip lining. I would like to just see real people wearing a GoPro. Like, you know, here's me dropping the kid off at school.
Can I tell you, I agree so much with this, because the fact is, we're not all always adventure seekers to drop, you know, hundreds of dollars on us. But the way that they designed this camera, they actually made it for everyday, so to speak, folks. Like, for example, I used a GoPro, not this model, a previous one, when I took my daughter to Disney World, and I just wanted something on a stick, on a gimbal, to easily, that was small, take it around. I didn't have to think about it. I just hit record, and I knew it was going to work. That said, too, the reviewer for CNET who did this, that's how he started his review. He's like, I don't go ziplining all the time. I'm chasing my kids, and that's the kind of video I'm taking. And so he kind of puts it to the real test, but also to the extreme for a few other shots, too. So you kind of get that sense of how it can work in your life.
Your idea is a good one,
I know.
Though.
I'm just thinking of starting my own YouTube channel, like, you know, my trials and tribulations of picking 12 perfect limes at the produce department at Mariano's.
So a slow pro is what you need, right? Not a GoPro, but something a little more.
Well, I still go places, me shopping at Marshall's, you know, trying on shoes. This is like everyday life for people.
Yeah.
They have a setting in the camera where you can, like, do, like, time-lapse to to speed things up and then just hit one button to like put it back to normal. So yeah, you're shopping around Marshalls and getting that cool speed, you know, effect, and then suddenly when you find the one, hit that button, slow it down a little bit
and savor it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
There, I'm gonna make my own YouTube channel.
You're gonna be 100 air someday, Wendy.
That's really funny. Someone was accusing me of my 70s style earlier today, and that 70s style is of course a Levi's jean jacket, but there is a Techtober twist to it. Tell us about that, Bridget.
Okay, so there is now a smart jean jacket. Levi's is working with Google. They've actually announced this a while ago, so it's not like the first time we're hearing about it, but the Google technology is being built into the denim of these sleeves. It's about the stick of gum size, you know, kind of just tucks into the sleeve and connects to your phone via Bluetooth. And basically, you can get time, weather, traffic, just kind of like you know, tapping your sleeve to activate something on a screen. Maybe you leave your phone behind and it'll set off an alert because your jacket's not next to your phone. Or you take a photo, so like, it's hard to reach the shutter button. Maybe you make your sleeve the shutter button. You can kind of program it in different ways. And it's coming out Thursday in select Levi's stores. So they have two different cuts, but the cheaper one's going to cost about $200, and then another one is about $250.
I can't believe,
Wendy, you got to get one.
No, but a jean jacket is still much more expensive than you thought, so this isn't that much more.
Right.
Yeah, their whole pitch is like, keep your phone in your pocket and eyes on the world around you to stay connected without being distracted. But hitting the sleeve constantly is going to distract me anyways, I guess. But if you're biking or you want something like really, like I don't want to pull my phone out, maybe you want to have an alert sent to your ear, your like, you know, ear pods or whatever you got in your ear, you just tap your sleeve, maybe that's something. But I think it's for like the super high techie people. Really for me. I'd be too distracted.
What about the
I'd put it in the wash.
That would be a problem.
Sure.
What are you supposed to do? Just dry clean that, or just make sure you take the technology out of it before laundering?
For some of the smart jackets I've seen, I haven't seen this one personally, there is a way to take the big component out. That said, there's still some wiring between the little pocket you put the computer in to, like, say, the button on the sleeve. So if there is wiring that's running through the back and down the sleeve, yeah, you're going to hand wash that.
I was reading something about Alexa. I'm not going to say it to set people's off, but yes, it seems to be listening, and it saves things in the search that you request so it can better serve you in the future. I was reading something about purging that information. Is that important to do to empty your cache?
Yeah, let me break that down a little bit. When it comes to these smart assistants, whether it's Amazon, Google, when you're asking, or Siri, when you're asking a question, there's this agreement in your settings, a checkbox that you may or may not remember was checked that said, would you like to have someone in the back end listen to your saying so we can make our computer smarter? Because basically there's a human who has to say, oh, if Wendy said, what's the weather? We want to make sure that the computer gave the right answer. And so that they review them from time to time. And that doesn't mean everything you said is being personally reviewed by a human, but every once in a while it is. And the news came out that when people didn't realize how much was being reviewed by humans, it kind of freaked folks out. And so there was this push over the summer where tech companies said, listen, you can delete this information, you can opt out of it. I think the real criticism was it was never apparent that you opted in the first place. So it's important for everyone to kind of go through their settings when they're setting something up, like a new smart speaker, and you know, decide if you want to participate in something like that. But yes, you can see what it has heard. And in the case of Amazon, they said that after so much time has gone by, they'll just kind of like delete it, so they won't keep it forever. You're really trusting these tech companies to be good on their word with that. But I've done it, and you know, it kind of helps you maybe understand like what catchphrases it said, or sometimes sometimes I've noticed you don't know why it went off, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, wait, I didn't say its name. Why did it go off? You can now ask, in the case of Amazon, you know, why did you just say that? It'll tell you what it heard. Maybe it heard a word that sounded like its name. You had a couple S's in there. It's those kind of moments that maybe can lead some, like, you can look that up and kind of get a better sense of what it's recording.
So then, Bridget, it'll be up to you to re-enter whatever you wanted, but to enunciate more? Is that what they're shooting for with that, or what?
And well, it's more like they're trying to take the mystery out of what is being recorded and why. Because a lot of times we're going, wait, why did you record that conversation? And, you know, there was just a series of stories that all came out, you know, rapid fire about this issue. So that's why tech companies at their latest events are all talking about privacy more. I feel like it's an after the fact thing.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, we all need to be paying attention to what we're agreeing to and what exactly is being sent over to the companies.
Watch your back, Bill.
Well, you have to.
And your front.
Yeah. And your sides, everything.
Thank you, Bridget. She is Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor.
Do we have to say Techtober, Bridget? Is that up to us individually, or has it been decided we have to say it?
It's up to you if you want to say it. It's also up to you if you want to celebrate with candy corn or any sort of other treat.
Right. That's fair.
Why don't we do Tectacular instead of Spooktacular?
That's great. All right. We're in. Thanks, Bridget.
No problem. Tomorrow there's a Microsoft event, so stay tuned to that. There'll be more gadgets to talk about then with new Surface tablets and laptops and whatnot.
Very good. Thank you. It's Bridget Carey from CNET. That's who that is.
Tectacular.
Yeah.
I'm going to do everything tacular
don't,
today.
Don't.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's 720 WGN. I have to tell you, it's funny hearing you say the honey-do list, because I bet you're the one who writes one for Terry.
Yeah, there's not much I can do, Wendy. I mean, let's be honest. I can adjust the thermostat, can make sure the doors are locked at night.
That's good enough.
My skill set is not what it should be.
Take the garbage out?
Sometimes.
Just a sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Huh. You split it up a little.
Happy first day of October.
Thanks, and to you and yours.
It's an octacular.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is.
All right. Fall is here. I know people. I hate that sweater weather. I hate that. I hate pumpkin spice lattes and anything pumpkin spice. So do you.
Mm-hmm.
Fall is here, yet record-breaking 90-plus degree weather is happening all around the country.
It is hard to imagine. It's October, and it's very, very warm outside.
Now, I warned you that my girlfriend Sue and her husband Jeff got married on the second week of October, the 14th, I believe.
Yeah.
It was 80-some degrees, and the church didn't have the air conditioning on because it was October.
It happens.
It does, but now it's happening more and more, and this isn't 80, this is 90.
Mm-hmm.
It is technically autumn. Parts of the U.S. are currently feeling some historic heat. There are 162 possible record highs and 164 record warm lows, also known as the lowest temperature that's warmer than usual. They're all forecast across the country from Tuesday to Thursday.
Yeah.
All those records could be broken. On Wednesday, temperatures in New York City's Central Park could reach 90 degrees. According to the National Weather Service, there have only been 5 other recorded times when the area has seen 90-degree temperatures in October, and the last one was in 1941.
Wow. My wife and both my daughters were in New York over the weekend, and they said, overall, it was sweltering hot. No matter where they went, it was just steamy hot everywhere.
And you don't expect that.
No, not this time of year.
I think we need to change that wearing white after Labor Day to wearing white after Halloween.
I'm right with that.
Because you can wear it. In Atlanta...
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual.
Say Hotlanta,
I was
Wendy.
Going to.
Say it. You want to say it.
No, I'm saving that for my Hot-tacular that I'll be telling you about.
All right.
In Atlanta, where it's not unusual to see summer heat overstay its welcome there, looking at a different kind of record. Currently, the record in Atlanta is 90 days over 90 degrees in a calendar year.
Wow.
If every day between today and Friday hits the forecast 90 degrees, it would make 91 days over 90 in 2019.
That's a lot of hot.
A new record level of hot.
That is very, very hot right there.
And Indiana, our neighbors, they have been bracing for record heat this week. The National Weather Service says the unusual early season heat will dissipate by the end of the week. We'll start to feel a bit of that familial fall chill. I'm telling you, this has to play a part of the trees being confused and plants being confused.
Right. No question.
You've seen some of the leaves starting to change colors.
Mm-hmm.
But then some of them are still green and hanging on. Mm-hmm. It's very crazy right now.
Yesterday on my way home through Evanston, I drive along Sheridan Road for part of my route, and there wasn't just a scattered amount of people on the beach. There were a bunch of people on the beach on the last day of September.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Montana, conversely, was buried with record-breaking snow over the weekend.
Yeah.
Browning, Montana got 48 inches of snow, and Great Falls, Montana hit a new one-day September snow record with 9.7 inches. The unseasonable heat is part of a larger pattern of, there's no way to deny it. It's right. Climate change, baby.
Well, and yet there are many people denying it.
Shifting temperature patterns across the globe fueled several dangerous summer heat waves that broke records in Europe. That's right. Wasn't it, was it John Williams who was going to Paris or Steve Bertrand, one of them, and was saying...
You can't tell those two apart.
I don't remember who went, because they both have gone and will go.
Right.
But they were saying, like, the record degree, 98 degree heat, and air conditioning is not really good there.
Right. That's true.
I could not live.
Yeah.
Another heat wave rolled all the way up from the Sahara to Greenland, where the high temperatures threaten the world's second largest ice sheet.
Wow.
I mean, this whole global warming thing, why can't we can't call it that anymore? It's climate change.
We've been asked to say climate change instead. I'm not sure what the difference is. It means essentially the same thing.
Yeah, the polar ice caps are melting and it affects weather everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't you love when people say, you know, when it snows really badly, they always say,
where's your global warming now?
Are you shoveling the global warming?
Yeah, I know. Now, a couple of weeks ago, during a particularly warm spell, it was around the second week of September, I said to you, I would take, if somebody offered me this between now and the end of the year, I would take this. But you said, no, you wouldn't like it like this between now and December. If you got 80 or 90 days of this, you wouldn't like that?
It's pretty hot, Bill. I mean,
yeah,
you know, the days are shorter. Have you noticed that? That's kind of depressing.
Sure, but that's inevitable.
I know, and I know it's coming, but it just really hit me the other day.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you just want, you know, cool temperatures and chili. I've also decided I don't even like chili, but it just goes together. I'll make a pot of chili.
You're supposed to have it this time of year. But wouldn't it be, I know it's a little hotter than you're accustomed to, but this is idyllic. When you go outside, it's just so nice. Yeah, it's a little bit hotter, but
70 degrees.
As opposed to...
Crisp, sunny, 70, Bears win all the time. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I guess.
We'll see what happens. Well, we'll see. We'll take a look at those record-breaking highs and see what happens.
But you know how once it gets to be... that chillier weather, you say to yourself, well, now it's not going to be nice in Chicago again until June. I got to wait 7 or 8 months for it to be nice again. This is just so perfect for me. I love this.
I'll enjoy it because I think
coming.
It changes tomorrow.
I know it does. Quick. Coming up, the stories that matter with Jordan Bernfield from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.